Hey, everybody, Kevin Rose here. If you want to follow me up, Instagram.com/Kevin Rose. I always got to get that little plug in every podcast. Very excited to have Jim Quick on the show today. Jim is a professional brain optimizer. He will help you improve your memory, help you to learn how to speed read, increase your decision-making skills. I mean, he has got this huge toolkit of things to delve into to really help you learn how to fix your brain. And I've had this problem. I was in second grade and I got in front of the class. I wasn't in front of the class. It was in front of the entire school. We were doing a Christmas holiday musical. I had three lines to memorize. I locked up on stage. Pretty sure some kids were laughing at me. And from that point forward, I was scared. I was scared to, I thought my brain was broken. I thought I could memorize things. I had trouble memorizing my multiplication tables, and it just followed me throughout life. Even in my 20s and 30s, like, I was really scared to repeat people's names. I couldn't quite make that, you know, face and name lock, and I thought, you know, this isn't natural. Most people can remember people's faces or names, or one of the two. Maybe they can't get both, but they can normally get one of them, and I can't get any of them. And it was, you know, it's really it feels like a disability in some ways. And one of the things that I was excited about, because I was following Jim and some of his work on Instagram and some of the stuff, the podcast that he had done, and I really liked a lot of the things that he had to say, especially because he also had the same problem. His was a little different. At age five, he had a childhood head injury that left him struggling with his brain and having a difficult time in school. But one of my favorite quotes from him is, he says, "I am not special. I didn't naturally have these superpowers. They were learned. And if I can learn them, anyone can learn them regardless of age, background, or education." And one of the things that I realized here just in the last couple years has been that I have been my number one enemy. I've been holding myself back, because in the back of my head, going all the way back to second grade, I've always told myself, this is a disability you have. This is a problem you have. Your brain is not like other people's brains. You can't pick up these skills. And that is just obviously a non-starter. I'm not even trying. So he's convinced me, and we get into it a little bit today, that step one is just really getting over that fear and that phobia that you have a broken brain, and there is actual things that you can do about it. And then we get into things like nutrition and some tips and things like that. So I hope you enjoyed this episode. I have since picked up learning Japanese. I have since really taken my brain health seriously. I actually went down to this institute here locally in Portland and did a diagnostic kind of brain test to see where I was falling on, you know, just to make sure that my brain was functioning properly. And I passed with flying colors. And I think that a lot of me being at ease and relaxed allowed me to kind of fall into it and do a really good job. Whereas if I had been tense and thought something was wrong with my brain, I think I would have froze up and had a even more difficult time completing these tasks. I've since been doing some of the brain training games as well. I've used Lumosity in the past and continue to do so. I think that's a fun little way to kill some time and also keep your brain fresh. And then I've experimented with a bunch of nootropics. Lion's mane mushroom is one of my favorites. And then just phospholipid forms of omega-3s, just little things like that to also increase the brain power. Oh, also high-intensity interval training on the workout side really helps. Learn a little bit of Japanese, sit down for 30 minutes, and then go hit the bike and do, you know, 20 minutes of HIIT. That's a great way to retain new information. Anyway, Jim Quick's awesome. Here he is. I hope you enjoy this episode. Awesome. Well, first, I just want to say, you know, thanks for coming on the show. I've been a fan of your, it's crazy to say a fan of your Instagram. That's like the world these days. I've been following your Instagram and listened to your podcast in the past. So it's nice to have you on.
Thanks, Kevin. I've been looking forward to this. It's a long time coming.
Yeah, we've been kind of like going back and forth for a few months now, trying to figure out a time to make this happen. So it's a bummer we couldn't be in the same room, but I'm glad to have you. One of the things I'd love to do, though, is I'd love to just start at the beginning of your journey and talk about how you got started, how this became your career, and where did that passion come from?
Well, I would say that my inspiration was my desperation. And I don't know how many people can relate to this, but sometimes life throws you a curveball. And mine came at the age of 5 years old, actually. So I had a head injury. So when people see me on stage or on video, they'll see me do these memory feats where I'll have 100 people stand up and I'll memorize their names in real time, or give me 100 words or 100 numbers and I'll memorize them forwards and backwards. But I always tell people, I don't do this to impress you. I really do this to express to you what's really possible, because the truth is every single person who's with us today could do that and a whole lot more. We just weren't taught. If anything, I feel like we were taught a lie that somehow that our potential, our intelligence, our creativity, you know, you name it, is somehow fixed, like our shoe size. But we've discovered more about the human brain, probably more in the past 10 years than the previous 1,000 years. And what we found is we're grossly underestimating our own capabilities. And so I know this because I grew up with these learning difficulties that came from this head trauma. And how it manifested was teachers would have to repeat themselves 3, 4, 5 times. I would pretend to understand what they were saying, but I didn't really understand. I had very poor focus. I had a very poor recall of memory. It took me extra 3, almost 4 years longer to learn how to read.
Oh, wow.
Which is really, you remember when they used to pass around those books, you used to get in those circles and you have to read out loud.
I hated that. Oh my God. So I had memory issues as well. Like I had a hard time memorizing the alphabet. Multiplication tables were like really difficult for me.
Really?
It was tough because all the kids around me just seemed to do it without effort, you know? And you'd be sitting there and you'd watch them, and I had this little thing that you could push on and you would reveal the answer. And they were just like doing it. I was like, how can I remember that? I can't remember that. And so I think I had the same issue at a very young age. I was put into this box kind of thing, like you're special, you have special needs, and it was very frustrating.
Yeah, my box was I remember because I used to be really into comic books, because I taught myself actually how to read by reading comic books late at night. Like when my parents thought I was sleeping, I'd be underneath the covers with my flashlight and I'd be reading the Avengers and X-Men comic books and such.
That's awesome. I just found my Wolverine number one.
Really?
I was unpacking a box here and I have Wolverine number one, like somewhere, I think it's in the room over, but that's like my most valuable. I looked it up and it's only like $100 or something, but it's still like, to me, it's like one of my favorite possessions.
It is, because something about those comics, especially at an early age. And when I feel like at the age of 9, I remember a teacher pointing to me saying, that's the boy with the broken brain, talking to another adult. And you know, adults have to be very careful with their external words because they become a child's internal words. So every time that I did badly on a quiz or a book report or an exam, or I wasn't picked for the soccer team or whatever, I would always say to myself, oh, it's because I have the broken brain. And that became an identity. And, you know, people come to me all the time. They're like, Jim, I have a horrible memory. I'm not smart enough. I'm not good enough. This runs in my family. I'm a senior, whatever it is. And I always tell people, if you fight for your limitations, you get to keep them. You know, if you argue for your limits, they're yours. And we have to be very careful of our self-talk and also the programming from other people around us. But for me, when we were passing around that book, every single time that book came closer and closer to me, you know, where I had to read out loud, it was the worst feeling in the world.
I was there as well. Same thing.
I feel like, you know, I just thinking about it now, I feel like that's where a lot of the fear of public speaking comes from. Because all of these things can be traced back to when we're children, you know, when these are imprinted on us. And think about it, we're not good at anything we do the first, you know, handful of times we do it. But when all eyes are on you and you're reading out loud, and this is your, you know, your public speaking, you know, one of your first public speaking experiences, you know, that experience, you know, with that emotion, that emotional flood of that nervousness and fear, and your amygdala is like firing off. You feel like there's a saber-toothed tiger like chasing you. Isn't that what they say? It's like the number one fear, like in America.
Yeah, I think you're right. And then what's worse is like you start stumbling on your words and it starts compounding on itself.
Oh my goodness.
And then the next time you do it, you're like, oh shit, like last time was horrible. How am I ever going to get through this? And then it just gets worse.
Yeah, there's like this negative momentum, right? Because it's funny, in psychology, they call that the confidence loop, where the more competent you get at something, the more confident you get at it. Mm-hmm. And if you're more confident, you're more likely to do it, which makes you more competent and confident and so on. But I guess it gets spiraled downwards also.
Right.
But public speaking, I think, is number one fear. I read fire is number two and death is number three. The old joke is like, if you're at a funeral, most people would rather be in the box than the one giving the eulogy because they're so scared of that. But I think, you know, we could probably trace a lot of that. And those two are actually my two biggest challenges growing up, interesting enough, was learning and public speaking. Because when you feel like you're the boy with the broken brain, I remember when I was in high school and I wasn't doing well. And a teacher called my parents in to give me an opportunity to fix it and gave me an extra credit, like book report that I could do to kind of pass English class. And she gave me this assignment on doing a book report on Leonardo da Vinci and Einstein and kind of comparing the two and such. And I worked on this, Kevin. Like, I mean, I've never worked on anything before. I had like this focus and I would be at the library every day after school. And I remember the day of, you know, my parents had it like really professionally bound. I go to class where I have to turn it in and the class goes like normal. And at the end, the teacher says, okay, class, we have a surprise. And he says, Jim, can you please come to the front and tell us about your book report? And I freaked out because I didn't realize this was going to be also an oral report. I thought I could just hand it in and get my extra credit. But I don't know how much time goes by because I'm like sweating. I can't even breathe because I'm phobic of public speaking. I look at the teacher and I lie and I said I didn't do it. You know, meanwhile, I just spent 2 months of my life, like every day, 5 days a week, you know, after school, like putting my heart and soul into this. Like I've never put anything into anything. And you could see her disappointment in her eyes. And I remember when the class cleared, I was the last one there and I left and I took the book report and I threw it out in the trash.
Oh my God.
And, I don't know if it's like, if symbolic, you know, where I was throwing out like my dreams or my potential, but it was really bad.
Did your parents eventually go help you sort that out? I hope.
Yeah. I mean, I eventually passed it enough, you know, I did, okay. I was put in, to you're talking about like your challenges growing up, you know, put in a box. I remember because I was so into comic books and I was into Dungeons and Dragons and stuff like that. I hung out with all my friends who were really, really, they're like very, you know, geeky, nerdy group. But I was like the only one that didn't have the grades in that group. So all of them were part of this group they called MASP. They were invited for a special club called MASP, More Able Student Program. Wow. And I remember me and my friend Joey, we were the only two that weren't invited to be part of that group. And we created our own group, the two of us, called LASP, Less Able Student Program. And so it's crazy because at that age, you know, again, you know, you're conditioned. And so how did I turn this around? At the age of 18, I went to college and I thought I could make a fresh start. You know what I mean? I thought I could start over and show the world, show myself, make my family proud because I'm the oldest of three kids. And, you know, my parents immigrated here in the same, you know, the immigrant story. We grew up in the back of a laundromat and language and all that. But I really wanted to be a good role model for my younger brother and sister. And I took all these classes thinking I would do better. And I purposely, you know, wanted to be around like no one who knew me in high school. So then, you know, sometimes the expectations of other people also limit like who you think you are.
Sure.
You know what I mean? And I feel like that if you, one of the challenges, whether it's for an entrepreneur or just anyone who wants to be better, is the expectations of other people. That we could literally go broke buying into the opinions and expectations other people have for us and not living our own life. And, you know, I spent a lot of time in nursing homes and senior centers because I lost my grandmother to Alzheimer's, which is, you know, one of the, you know, these things put you on a path, right? Yeah. In terms of your life. And, so I spent, and I'm not teaching them memory techniques, but really just having them tell stories. So that, cause I love learning from people because they have, everyone has these, you know, vast life experiences. But when I'm there, people, you can tell people's biggest regret usually is like not living their life the way they wanted to live it. And so when I was 18, I took all these classes and I did worse. I would love to say that's the end of the story. I just did amazing and I just, unicorns and rainbows, but I did worse and I was ready to quit school. And a friend's like, hey, before you tell your parents you're going to quit, why don't you go home with me this weekend? I'm going to see my family and get some perspective. And I think perspective, when I teach people how to learn skills or subjects faster and accelerate their learning, I feel like perspective is an important aspect to that. You know, changing the people, changing the place that you're in. And so I decided to go and the family's pretty well off and has a beautiful home near the water. And the father's walking me around his property before dinner. And he asked me this very innocent question, which is the worst question you could ask me. He said, how's school? And I'm pretty reserved. I just start bawling. like, cause I have so much pressure and I just comes out right there.
God, man, college is so tough for so many kids. It's like the weight of the world on your shoulders sometimes, you know? I could see how that would, like, that's like a trigger to release all of that all at one moment, huh?
Exactly. And I mean, because at that age, you don't know who you are. I mean,
right.
You know, and also trying to figure out relevancy, you know, in terms of like, how am I going to apply this to things? And when I feel like I was just not enough, I tell them this, I tell them my whole broken brains, you know, story and how school is just not for me. And he's like, very smart man. He's like, Jim, he asked a question. And I think questions are really powerful, also a tool that we underutilize. And he says, Jim, why are you in school? What do you want to be? What do you want to do? You know, what do you want to have, create, share in your life? And I honestly didn't have an answer for that. Because if you never ask yourself that question, you don't have like an answer. And I feel like a lot of creativity or innovation comes from, you know, ability, like yourself to be able to ask new questions. People ask questions people haven't asked before because you'll get answers and understandings that other people haven't had. And I go to answer him and he says, stop. And he pulls out a journal out of his back pocket. And I honestly thought only like 10, 12 year old girls carried diaries and wrote in diaries, but he tears out a couple of sheets and hands them to me. And he says, Jim, it's important you write these down. I don't, do you have like a journal practice? Do you keep a journal? Do you write yourself?
I do in terms of when I have ideas, like I have sketchbooks kind of like this where I just like write down and sketch things out. So it's a way to catalog all of my different ideas and kind of where it takes my head, but I don't journal day to day in terms of my activities.
Yeah. I'm curious. I don't know if there's ever been any research on this because I always do that. I have like a note taking process, you know, for myself. And that was one of the episodes we did was on how to take notes because it's funny because school teaches you a lot of like, you know, like what to learn, but they don't really necessarily show you how to learn it.
Right. Yeah.
And, but I noticed this correlation between, people that they reflect a lot sometimes, you know, and they write things down. And I mean, I think about the journals, Einstein or Edison's or, you know, Da Vinci's and what those journals are worth. And I don't know if it's because they're geniuses that they write a lot or it's because they write a lot that turned them into these, you know, geniuses, if you will, but he makes me write down like why I'm in school. Like, what do I want to be, do have, you know, share in my life? And it became like a bucket list, right? You know, all the things that I want to be able to achieve before I kick the bucket. And when I'm done with the exercise, I think it's over and I just fold up the sheets of paper to put in my pocket and he just grabs them right out of my hand. And I'm freaking out because I didn't realize he was going to look. I mean, these are my dreams. I've never shared with anybody, right? My fantasies, things that, you know, I'm very insecure about. And he starts looking at it and he's obviously pretty successful. And I don't know how much time goes by, but when he's done, he looks at me, he's like, Jim, you are this close to everything on that list. And he spreads his index fingers apart about maybe a foot. And I'm thinking, no way. Give me 10 lifetimes. I'm not going to crack that list.
Right.
And he goes and he takes his fingers and he puts them to the side of my head. Meaning that what's in between, you know, my brain is like the key, if you will. And he takes me into a room of his home that I've never seen before. It's wall to wall, ceiling to floor, covered in books. I mean, I've never seen like a library in somebody's house. And keep in mind, like I'm phobic of book. I've never finished a book cover to cover. It's like being scared of snakes, it's like being in a room full of snakes, right? What makes it worse though is he starts going to the shelves and starts grabbing snakes and starts to like hand them to me.
Yeah.
And I start looking at these titles and there are these books, the biographies of some incredible men and women in history and some really early old school personal growth books like Norman Vincent Peale, The Power of Positive Thinking, Napoleon Hill, Dale Carnegie kind of stuff like Psycho-Cybernetics and, you know, all about the power of the mind. And he said, Jim, I want you to read one of these books a week. And I was like, have you not been listening to this whole thing? Like, yeah. I have learning challenges. I have disabilities. I like switch words in my head. I have this broken brain. And he's like, and I tell him I have all this schoolwork. I have midterms. There's no way I could read this and do my schoolwork. And he looks at me and he says, Jim, he's like, don't let school get in the way of your education. And I didn't realize this was like 25 years ago. I didn't realize this was like a Mark Twain quote. But I was like, that's really makes sense. And yet I can't commit to doing it because if I commit to it, I'm going to do it. And very smart man. He takes out of his pocket my bucket list, which he still has. And he starts reading every single one of my dreams out loud. And I don't know, Kevin, something about hearing your dreams that you've never even spoken out loud in another man's voice, like put out in the universe, mm-hmm. it messed with my mind and my heart like something fierce. And honestly, a lot of the things on that list were things I wanted to do for my parents, things they can never afford or they would never do for themselves. And with that leverage, I realized that motivation is so important to this process too. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, perspective, the power of questions, but motivation. I remember I was doing a program in Silicon Valley for a group you're familiar with. And afterwards, Bill Gates was in the audience. He comes up to me and he's like, and I asked him like, what, you know, if you have any one superpower, what would it be? And he's like, oh, the ability to read faster. And I was like, oh, I could totally help you with that. Because leaders are readers, right? If someone has decades of experience, they put it into a book and you can sit down in a few days and read that book. You could download decades in the days, which I think is just incredible because it saves.
Did you just sign him up for an Audible account and put him at 2x speed and call it a day?
Yeah. I don't you love that? I love that. You know, everyone listens it and you listen it like 1.5 or 2 or yeah, 2x exactly. Because your brain can process it that fast, but you nobody can speak that fast. You know, it's interesting. As a side tangent, one of the reasons why people are slow readers is because it's something called sub-vocalization. Sub-vocalization. You ever notice like when you're reading something, you hear that inner voice inside your head reading along with you?
Of course.
Hopefully it's your own voice. It's not like somebody else's voice in there. The reason why it's an obstacle is because if you have to say all the words outside or inside in order to understand it, you can only read as fast as you could speak. Mm-hmm. In other words, your reading speed is limited to your talking speed and not your thinking speed, which is really interesting because do you have to say a word like computer to actually understand what a computer is or New York City, right? And again, going back to when you and I learned in that circle, you know, where we had to read out loud, and the teachers, you had to read out loud because they want to make sure you're pronouncing it correctly, phonetically, and so on. But later on, the teacher, I'm sure a lot of people could relate to this, the teacher said, you know, sit quietly, probably tired of listening everyone read, sit quietly by yourself or read quietly to yourself. Or read silently to yourself. And that's when you took those external words and you internalize and you realize that you learn, quote unquote, that in order to understand it, you have to say it, if not out loud, then inside. But we've noted that some of the fastest readers actually naturally, they sub-vocalize less. And just think about some of the words, like a lot of the words, first of all, are filler words and they are because this, that, you know, and so on. And then the other thing when it comes to this, when it comes to sub-vocalization, is you don't have like you see a stop sign, you don't say to yourself stop, right? When you're driving. So 95% of the words are categorized like sight words, words you've seen thousands of times that you don't have to pronounce. So it's just one of those habits that we learned that we need to unlearn, you know. And so a lot of I feel like accelerated learning is just an unlearning, unraveling process of bad habits we picked up. I believe there's no such thing as a good or bad student. There's just a trained student, untrained student. Just like I feel like whether it's reading, no such thing as a good or bad reader. It's just someone who's been trained correctly. Because it's not like reading is a skill. It's not something we were born with. And so it could be improved through proper practice and training. But the same thing with memory. There's no such thing as a good or bad memory. There's a trained memory or an untrained memory. And it was interesting because, you know, when I was sitting there, I was back. I go after I leave this man's home, like I'm back at school and I have a pile of books that I have to read for midterms and a pile of books that I promised to read. And going back to the close off that open loop with Bill Gates, we start having this deep conversation about the future of education. And I'm talking about it from a meta learning theory standpoint, meta learning, meaning learning how to learn. I think if there's one skill to master in the 21st century, it's our ability to learn faster because of change, right? With Moore's law. And I don't know how many different careers somebody who's graduating right now is going to have. I read it's upwards of 8+, just because who knows where the world's going to be 5 years from now. But the only constant is this change, right? So learning how to adapt and out, you know, and to retool and rethink and to learn new. The half-life of information is just it's just shorter and shorter. But now I'm here and I have all these. And I asked him I was going from a theory standpoint, and he was going from a tools technology standpoint. And then crowd was gathering and said, someone asked the question, what's missing? You have the theory and you have the technology. And we were talking about it and we came to the same conclusion. It's motivation, like understanding human motivation. Like why don't people do what's good for them? You know, mm-hmm. like it's common sense. We listen to all these podcasts, we read all these books, we go to these events, we get coaching, but all the coaching, online programs, podcasts, seminars, books, none of it works unless we work it, right?
Yeah. It works for the 90-minute duration of the talk or whatever it may be.
Exactly.
You get super amped up and pumped and you're going to change things and then it just falls away.
Exactly.
So how did this stick for you? What was it that you grasped onto in these books? Like, what did you learn to fix your own brain?
So the quick answer was the motivation for me was my family. So I agreed to read all these books, but I can't keep up because I don't have the time. Because that's the one thing, like everyone who's listening, we all have different incomes and, you know, health or networks or education. But the only consistent, you know, common thing that we are equal in is we have 24 hours a day, right? And so I don't have the time. So I take the time from all the other things. So I don't eat. I don't sleep. I don't spend time with friends. I don't work out. I just live in the library. And one night I just pass out. Late at night in the library, I fall down a flight of stairs. I hit my head again. It's really bad. So this is my third traumatic brain
injury. Please tell me that fixed everything. It was like amazing.
I had these incredible, like limitless powers.
Yeah, exactly.
But it was the opposite of that. I woke up in the hospital 2 days later and hooked up to all these IVs and I was dying. I mean, I was down 117 pounds. I was literally just wasting away. And I thought, a question that came up to my mind says, there has to be a better way. Like, how do I fix this? And this is what happened, Kevin. As soon as I had that thought, the nurse came in with a mug of tea and literally on it had a picture of Albert Einstein. And remember, like X amount of years ago, like back in high school, I did my book report on Albert Einstein and there was a drawing of him on there and had this quote of his that you've heard and we've all heard in different forms. It said, the same level of thinking that's created your problem won't solve your problem. And it made me think about, what's my problem? Ask a new question. I was like, well, I'm a really slow learner. I was like, how do I think differently about it? Well, maybe I could learn how to learn. And that's where this light bulb kind of came from. I asked the nurse to give me a course bulletin for next semester's classes. And I looked at all the classes to look at, and all the classes, 100% of the classes were classes on what to learn. Important stuff like math, mm-hmm. history, science, Spanish, but how many mm-hmm. classes were on how to learn? Like zero, literally. And I always thought that it's interesting. School teaches us what to learn, but not how. Like, where were the classes on creativity, critical thinking, problem solving, you know, classes on how to focus and concentrate, on how to study, mm-hmm. how to read faster, on how to remember things. Like, I always thought it should have been the fourth R in school. They teach you 3 R's, reading, writing, arithmetic. But what about remembering? What about retention? What about recall?
Yeah.
You know, Socrates says there is no learning without remembering. And so I set my studies aside and I just started studying. Like, I wanted to solve this puzzle, this riddle of how my brain works so I could work my brain. How does my memory really work practically so I could work my memory? And I started reading these books and studying everything from multiple intelligence theory to, you know, like, brain science, to speed reading, to an old 2,500-year-old mnemonic, like memory tricks.
Yeah.
And I swear, light switch went on and I started to understand things for the first time in school. For the first time, I had better focus. I started to retain things. My grades improved. As my grades improved, I couldn't help. I got really upset, that this wasn't taught to me back, because I struggled for, a decade and a half. And mm-hmm. needlessly, and so I started to tutor. And the reason why we're having this conversation today is one of my very first students, she is a freshman. She read 30 books in 30 days. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine going online and picking up 30 books, like print books or digital books, and like not skimming or scanning? You know, most traditional speed reading programs out there are skimming words, getting the gist, but really read and understood and retained it. And most importantly, applied it. And I wanted to find out not how she did it. I know exactly how she did it, but I want to know why, going back to human motivation. And I found out that her mother was dying of terminal cancer. And what doctors gave her only 60 days, 2 months to live. And the books she was reading were books to save her mom's life. I mean, and I just got goosebumps. Like, I call them truth bumps. Like, I didn't even know what to do. So, like, you know, I was just a kid and I just said, wish you luck, prayers, you know. And six months later, I get a call from this young lady. She's crying and she's crying and crying. I can't get a word out of her. But when she stops, I find out that they're tears of joy. that her mother not only survived, but is really getting better. Doctors don't know how. Wow. They don't know why. They called it a miracle, but her mother attributed 100% to the great advice she got from her daughter, who learned from these books. And at that moment, I realized that if knowledge is power, we've all heard that, that if knowledge is power, learning is our superpower. And I that's where I dedicated my life, to helping people learn how to learn. You know,
so do you start by helping people find their motivation? Like, is that a big piece of what you would... So someone comes into you and they sit down and they're like, listen, I have memory issues. I need to, you know, my brain's broken. Is motivation the first step in that process?
Yeah. I mean, I believe that there's a success formula. Like, there's a syntax to success. I call it HQ, three H's, head, heart, hands. Meaning that a lot of people think they could just visualize or set goals in their head, but they don't act with their hands. And you wonder, like, what's missing. And they procrastinate. They put things off. They self-sabotage, mm-hmm. right? And one of the checks I do with people is just to check in with the second H, which is our heart, which symbolizes what? It symbolizes feelings. It symbolizes emotions. I mean, we know in business, when it comes to, like, sales, that people don't buy logically. They buy emotionally, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's just, we're not logical. We're biological. And think about the dopamine, the oxytocin, the serotonin, the endorphins, everything that the chemical soup that gets us to act. Even when you think about motivation, it's like motive for taking action, right? But a lot of people aren't tapped into that. You know, I love that book by Simon Sinek, you know, who start with why, you know, tapping mm-hmm. into the why. In fact, like, three keys to improve everyone's memory who's listening to right now. Let's say people come to me all the time saying, you know, Jim, I want to have a better memory. And for me, that's like hearing somebody say, Jim, I want to be better at sports, like going to a right. coach, like what sport specifically? Because I feel like more than anything, I'm a brain coach. Like, I want to show people how to get, just like how a physical trainer wants to make you faster, stronger, more energized, more flexible, pliable, and so on, agile. I want you to have your mental muscles to be like that. I want you to be mentally stronger, you know, mentally more agile, more pliable, you know, more energized, more flexible here in your thinking, people's thinking. So as a brain coach, what I would do is, let's say it's target towards a specific outcome. So let's say somebody comes to me saying, I like to improve my memory. I say, that's great. You know, in what area specifically would you like to fix your forgetfulness? And then they'll say something like, oh, I'm forgetting my passwords, or I forgot what I have breakfast this morning. And everyone could relate to this, right? Everyone mm-hmm. feels like senior moments are coming a little bit early. Or you read a page in a book, get to the end, just forget what you just read. And you just wonder right. why. You reread it and you still don't know what you just read. Or something happens where you misplace things like your wallet, your purse, your cell phone, or if not, you know, or maybe your car keys, if not your car keys, your car. You ever like see the people in the parking lot, they're using their car alarms, like GPS.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
They don't realize
there's a feature in Google Maps now that actually will automatically bookmark where your car is when you get out of it.
Exactly.
So you can get, people have the, it's that common. They've added it as a feature.
It's incredible. And they don't realize that they took, like, you know, some like car service to get there or something like that. Right. And so, right. you know, we forget things, especially things like names. And so I think a lot of people who are listening to this are thinking like, yeah, how do I remember names? Have you ever met somebody, Kevin, you get their name and seconds later, after you get the handshake breaks, the name just like falls right through the floor?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
And I've heard the tactics like repeat their name out loud right. and think of their face as like the letter mm-hmm. of their first, you know, I've heard a lot of that stuff.
Yeah.
What is your take on that?
Yeah. So I would go back, you know what I would start it? Before I go into any tactics or mechanics, like, you know, like, associate a person to a celebrity or put a mark on their head if their name is Mark, you know, that kind of stuff. But I really do believe 80% of success is internal. It's like a mindset. So what I would say is, if you're forgetting names, anyone who's listening to this, which is, you know, it's the meta message. What's the meta message we send to somebody when we forget their name? Like
that we don't care.
Yeah. Like, they're not important to us, that we don't care. And is it true? Not all the time, right? And so how are you in business, for example? How's anyone going to show they're going to care for that person's future, their family, their finances, their health, whatever it is you're selling them, if you don't care enough just to remember their name, right? They say a name is the sweetest sound in a person's ears. So just remember these three things. M-O-M. This is the mother of all memory, you know, practices, if you will. Let's say somebody, I'm talking to the person listening to this right now. You have trouble remembering names, right? get some, you're talking to somebody, you just got their name three times, you still know what it is, or it's not a short-term issue, it's a long-term issue. You're like at the gym, somebody taps you on your shoulder, you turn around, you see somebody you recognize, but for the life of you, you don't remember who that person is. And what makes it worse is when that person has the audacity to remember your name, right? Then it gets really awkward. Or you have to, or somebody comes up in the conversation in your position, you have to like introduce these two people, and it's very embarrassing, right?
Yes.
And I think there was a Seinfeld episode about this, right? I think, wasn't Jerry like dating somebody that was intimate with her, and then like he didn't even know what her name was? And every time like George or Kramer would come in, they would try to introduce themselves and try to get the name, or she would go to the bathroom and he would try to go find her driver's license and her purse. It rhymed with a part of the female anatomy or something like that. So it's a common thing, right? It's everyday kind of occurrence. So I would remember, let's say you have trouble remembering names, but there's a briefcase of $1 million cash for you, tax-free, or your favorite charity, just to remember the name of the next stranger you meet. Who's going to remember that name?
Everybody.
So all of a sudden, everyone, you know, 95% of people I talk to will self-admit that they have trouble remembering names. But if I ask them for $1 million, will you remember the name of the next person you meet? A stranger, and 100% of them will be like memory experts, you know, genius champions, right? So the question as a coach, doesn't always tell you, you know, something brand new. They remind you what you're doing when you're doing it well, because I believe genius leaves clues. And ultimately, I think we are our own expert. So many people give their power, their sovereignty to people on the outside, but I feel like all education comes out of self-education and self-coaching. And I feel like part of it is like calling people on their stuff, and meaning that you can remember names. It had nothing to do with your capability or your potential. You just didn't want to. Because here's the thing, the truth is, right? Because I want people to realize the truth so they can own this and have really strong ownership towards it, is that you don't remember all names, but you don't forget all names either. And genius leaves clues. There's always a method behind the magic. When somebody could come out and give a TED talk and, you know, remember those, that 18 minutes or whatever, or learn another language or learn the piano, there are absolute clues that they're doing unconsciously that other people aren't doing consciously. And once you learn them, you can get the same kind of effect. And so everybody could do it.
Wait, you're saying that people are doing these are habits that they're doing unconsciously. And then for us that aren't doing them naturally unconsciously, we need to then go and learn how to do them consciously. So we're basically doing the same thing as them, but we have to be more deliberate about it, because it's for them, it's a natural unconscious thing, and us, it's an applied thing.
Right. I mean, is that right? And who knows how much it came naturally, because a lot of these people could have put in their deep work into it, right?
Sure.
When they were younger and such like that. I find that a lot of people who have achieved a level of quote unquote mastery, a level of expertise, a lot of them are unconscious actually how they do it. So just because somebody is great at something doesn't mean they're great at sharing how they do it with other individuals.
Right, sure.
But going back to this idea where genius leaves clues, it's just like, learn from ourselves. Let's self-coach ourselves. You don't remember all names, but you don't forget all names either. And there's a pattern. Like if people ask me like what genius is, I would never say it comes down to IQ. Like I feel like that's just flawed, that a test you take when you're 6 years old is just fixed all through your life. That doesn't make any sense to me, because I can show anybody how to do better on an IQ test, because it's just strategies. Right, strategy, how to memorize that number or visual spatial tone, whatever it is. And I also feel like while we're on the subject of this IQ thing, standardized tests, like even when you and I grew up and took the SATs, it like tested for what it was like verbal, like reading, and it tested for mathematical intelligence. But there's a slew, a spectrum of genius, right? Like if somebody is just, it makes you kind of feel like if you're not good in one of those two things, that has something to do with your value in society or your self-worth.
Right.
Like, you know, Howard Gardner did all that research at Harvard about multiple intelligence theory, saying there's not just two, there's lots of different intelligence. Like, what about people who have great visual spatial intelligence, that are great artists, right? Graphic designers. What about people who are great and have great high levels of interpersonal intelligence, people who are great with people? You know, that's
yeah. I mean, I've always thought those things are so limited in their scope. They're just useless.
Absolutely. And so, you know, musical intelligence, kinesthetic, body, athlete intelligence, you know, all of these different things. So going back to the motivation, like understanding our own motivation or under the patterns, I think genius, how I would identify it is, pattern recognition. I feel like people who are geniuses, they see patterns that other people don't see. if they're financial, like in or in their health genius, whatever, they see things, they have distinctions, and they can relate things together. And so we like less self genius applied towards ourselves. Like when we're successful in remembering someone's name, I think one of the clues that they're there, as opposed to when we forget someone's name, is we're motivated. Like that person could be good for our business. That person we are attracted to. You know, there's some level of when we're talking about head, heart, hands, you can remember names here, but you're not acting with your hands. They actually get the result. Mm-hmm. Tap into this. And what I would ask people to do is just, you could create that because intent matters. Like people are so interested in being interesting, right? You know, especially on what they post on social media or having conversations with people. But I feel like it's more about being interested in people because nothing sells like sincere interest. And so just asking yourself, why do I want to remember this person's name when you meet them? Maybe it's to show them respect. Maybe it's to make a new friend. Maybe it's to do some business. Maybe it's to practice these things that we, you know, listen to on this podcast. Because if you can't come up with one reason, you're not going to remember that person's name.
I like that idea of the respect piece because every single person is worthy of respect.
Yeah.
And kindness and love. And I feel that, you know, this is a great point because, you know, you might go to a business meeting, you might sit down with someone and the person you're meeting, of course, you'll remember their name because it's someone that you're there to interact with and get something done. But you know, you'll never remember the name of the person that brought you the coffee when you sat down for the first time. And it's like, why is that? It's because you didn't give them the same level of respect and attention and love that you gave the person sitting across from you for the, you know, business purposes. So like just remembering that people are worthy of that respect, I think allows you to really engage with them at a deeper level and not just to like, give me the coffee. I'm focused on my deal. It's like just treating everyone at the same level, I think is so important.
Yeah. Even when you're saying that, I'm listening to what you're saying. I feel like in society, sometimes people are always wanting to ask, like, so what do you do? Or, you know, what problem? Like, so they know.
That's the question I always ask. I never ask that question. I don't like that question, actually.
Because maybe when people are asking that, they're thinking about, oh, how much of that respect should I give you?
Right, exactly.
That's so
I was just at a party last night and there was probably 30 or 40 people there I didn't know. And it's funny how common that question is. Like, oh, what do you do? You know, and it's just like, I know that some people are doing it because they're just trying to start a conversation.
Right.
And that's totally fine. But I also know that it's used in like, okay, I'm going to judge you now and I'm going to move on to the next person or I'm going to stick with you depending on what your answer is. So I always keep my answers very broad to try and not get into it. I don't know. I'm weird like that though. I'm a little guarded in some ways, but I try to avoid asking other people that question.
Yeah.
I'd rather get to know them as a human and have that be the way that I get into someone. So,
yeah. And I think that comes across. So even if we were like going again, we haven't even talked about tactics, but this is just, you know, deep caring for somebody or respect, meaning that like, what if we had an underlying belief that not only does everyone, deserve respect, which is true if you choose to believe it. What if we feel like there's value in every single person? Like, what if we can learn something from every single person and we believe that and we act accordingly, that everybody has had their own unique life experience and they've learned something and they have wisdom that we just couldn't have gotten anywhere else.
I mean, that's true.
It is. Absolutely.
Absolutely
and
true.
So what if people associated to it though? A lot of people know things are true, but what if people actually just started reminded themselves of this fact? You know, because I feel like somebody can be humble and also confident at the same time because they know they're not better than anybody, but they also know that they're not less than anybody else and that we can learn something from everyone, you know, whether they're an example or an extreme example, we can learn something from somebody as a warning, even that's of something
absolutely. I mean, that's the way I have reframed a lot of my childhood with my certain interactions with my father. Mm-hmm. And I realized that I learned from that. I will not pass those things forward. And they were, you know, certain things that were very negative and weighing on me for a really long time. Yeah. But now I realize that it was just a learning moment, which is an amazing way to kind of reframe that. And very freeing in a way.
Yeah, I get that. Because a lot of the questions we get on our podcast is people have gone through trauma. You know, they have this big anxiety. And we know that chronic stress shrinks the brain and, it's, you know, puts you in fight or flight all the time and cortisol, adrenaline, and everything. But you know, people hear about post-traumatic stress. What people don't realize is some people come out of it with post-traumatic growth. and people could Google this term, but it's at a high level. I'm sure a lot of people could identify with this, that they've gone through adversity or difficulty that they wouldn't wish upon any other human being.
Right.
But some people who come out of it have found a real gift out of it, and they would genuinely, authentically say that I wouldn't change it, as hard as that was.
Right.
Because I found a strength. I found a meaning. I found a new mission in my life. You know,
it's scary though, right? Because like it, people can get locked in, and that's a spiral downward for them and they never get out of it, in which case that's a horrible thing that happened to them, or they can reframe it and get out of it, which then it becomes this very like amazing life event that taught you a lot. But how do I remember names?
Yeah. So going back to this is so the first thing, without even getting to the tactic, is I would stay in, like, everyone listening is really this conversation you and I are having about human motivation. Increase your motivation for remembering that person's name. And people think that you have motivation, just like they think they have energy, they have creativity, they have focus, they have memory, they have whatever. Those aren't things you have. If people walk out of anything, you know, this conversation with just one thing, what I would invite people to do is get curious and maybe do this little thought experiment where we take these nouns, the things that we think we have, and turn them into verbs. So maybe we don't have energy. Maybe we do energy. Maybe we don't have focus. We do focus. Maybe we don't have motivation. We do motivation. You know, I know certainly it's the case when it comes to memory. You don't have memories. We know, like, from the neurophysics of it, you actually do a memory. Like, there's actual, there's a behavior that's going on, new connections, right? There's an activity as opposed to something that's static when you have it. And so the benefit of turning something to a verb is it becomes a process, right? So motivation can be the same thing. You don't have, I mean, that would be a sad, you know what, why I enjoy your show? Because people self-select because they invest in themselves to grow. So they know it's not fixed, right? But the other reason is, I bet you a lot of your listeners identify more with a thermostat than they do a thermometer. Meaning that when I say thermometer, what's the function? The primary function of a thermometer is it just reacts to the environment. If there's a thermometer on the wall, it just reacts to whatever the environment is giving it. But a thermostat is completely different. Yes, a thermostat gauges the environment, but a thermostat what? It sets a temperature for human beings, that could be a goal. It could be a vision. It could be a standard. And what happens to the environment? The environment raises to meet that. And I feel like all the studies done on happiness come, like, the base principle is that you feel like you have the locus, the location of control on the inside. That certainly, as we are thermometers, sometimes we react to the weather, we react to politics, react how somebody treats us at the, you know, health food store or whatever it is. But who ultimately is determining, like, how we feel? Right. And of course we do, but we forget that responsibility. Like, one of years ago, I got to introduce two of my modern day superheroes together, and I'm going to drop a couple of names. And the purpose of these names is just because it's not to drop the names, more as a memory coach, it become triggers. We remember things through reminders. Right. And so, two people wanted to meet each other over dinner. So I invite them together, and it's, Richard Branson and Stan Lee. Now, I'm in the car, Stan Lee. And I remember, I'm a comic book geek, right? I have, like, I have 50 long boxes of comic books, you know, they're all bagged in pristine conditions. And so we're in the car, and I ask Stan, I was like, you've created all these superheroes, Avengers, X-Men, and I'm like, who's your favorite? And he looks at me, he's like, Jim, it's Iron Man. And I was like, I love Iron Man, it's awesome. He's like, Jim, who's your favorite superhero? And he has this, you might have seen it on Instagram, he has a big, like, Spider-Man tie. And I was like, my favorite is Spider-Man. And without a pause, he goes, Jim, with great power comes great responsibility, right? We've all heard it. It's in our DNA. Yeah. We don't even remember when we first heard it, the whole hero's journey. And I reverse things in my mind for my brain injury. And that's why I had so many reading challenges. And I was like, Stan, you're right. With great power comes great responsibility. And the opposite is also true. With great responsibility comes great power. Like, when we take responsibility for something, you know, wherever our lot in life, quote unquote, then we have great power to make things better. Because if we don't take responsibility, and people, they avoid responsibility, especially entrepreneurs, right? Like, sometimes they value freedom. So, like, they want to do what they want, when they want, with who they want, for as long as they want. And then discipline, you know, it takes away from, maybe they feel that. But if you can't get yourself to do the things that you need to do, then you're in prison, right? So it's actually the opposite. And, you know, we know that if you could do the hard things, life becomes easier. But because if you just do the easy things, which is nothing, the path of least resistance, which is like putting things off and procrastinate, if you just do the easy things all the time, then life becomes very hard. But if you do, if you do the hard things, like, you know, like your routines and things that matter, you know, whatever you gauge, like one of the most popular episodes for me and my shows was my morning routine. Because everybody has their different, like Tim has his, Oprah has theirs, Tony has his, you know, but, you know, so I have my 10 things I do every morning to jump, you know, mine are specifically to jumpstart my brain. But like, first you make your habits, and then your habits make you. But sometimes it's difficult because of willpower. And, but it, going back to how to remember names, it's a shared commonality, it's motivation. And we control motivation, just like we have the responsibility. We could gauge it and make a game. We could gamify it. You're like, on a scale of 0 to 10, how motivated am I to go to the gym or remember this person's name or to read this book or to meditate today? And I was like, oh, you know, maybe a 6, you know, at most. Well, how would I need to think about it in my head to maybe not a 10, but maybe make it an 8? You know, like, oh, let me think about that for a second. You know, and then like going to the gym, like, oh, I love that pump afterwards, or afterwards I want to reward myself with this. And all of a sudden I get more motivated.
Is that different for every person then, that motivation that you help people find? Like, just say for name memory, like yours might be a little bit different than somebody else's. Like, how do you coach people then to figure out the party problem?
Walk in,
they meet 10 new people that they have to remember those exactly. 10 names throughout the course of an hour.
Okay. Like, so here's the key. So I'll give you the framework that I use. So the M is motivation. So that'll get you so far. Now, keep in mind, most people remember, you know, if let's say someone's very motivated or remember somebody they're attracted to, they could be at like 100%. They're going to remember that person's name. They're going to remember their number. They're going to remember that conversation, because motivation leads to the second thing, the O, observation, right? So mom, M-O-M, the O is my observation. And observation basically is, a lot of people come to me and they blame their retention. Oh, I have horrible retention. It's not their retention. It's attention. It's their attention. It's them paying attention. I think the art of memory is the art of attention, right? It's just being there. It's just like what you're talking about, you know, the party that you went to last night. A lot of people, they don't have their attention there, because what are they doing? They're looking at who else is in the room. They're who's more important. Or if they're not distracted externally, they're distracted internally, you know, meaning that they're not listening, because the truth is, if people are honest, they're not really listening. They're thinking about how they're going to respond, or they're waiting for their turn to talk, right? And one of my very favorite books was by a mentor of mine, Dr. Stephen Covey. He wrote The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. And these are the 7 habits of highly effective people. And one of them was, seek first to understand, then to be understood. You know, if people came from that perspective, right? They're meeting someone for the first time, and they're just really like, cared about the person. And now think about it, like, even what we were talking about earlier, like, it's just about being a good human being, because we haven't even gotten to the last M, which are the mechanics, like the tools, techniques, and steps on how I do this stuff. Like, we're just talking about, when you want to remember someone's name, be motivated, which means a subtext is caring about the person. And the O is observing, which means just being present with the person, right? And that's just being a good person in general.
Right.
And so,
well, you're right. That is a big hurdle for a lot of people. I mean, it's, if you're thinking about, someone says something, you're thinking about, like, oh, this is the response I want to give, but I don't want to forget it, so I'm going to keep thinking about it. So I'm kind of not paying attention anymore. And so, you know, it's difficult. The more variables that are introduced, there's 5 other people standing around me.
Of course.
Like, your brain, my brain has always been so, and I'm sure technology has ruined it with all the multitasking we do, but my brain has always been so scattered that I kind of have to pick one thing. Otherwise, I'm going to lose these other pieces.
I hear you. When you do the 10 people in the room, you're doing them one at a time. So obviously, this is not in a perfect laboratory where there's no other sensory distractions. At any given time, there are 2 billion stimuli that we could be paying attention to, right? Primarily, the brain is a deletion device, because if we paid attention to everything, we would go crazy, you know, above and beyond. So we're always filtering through. And you're right. Like, I talk about superheroes a lot, and superpowers, not superpowers like jumping tall buildings and shooting lasers out of our eyes, but like, you know, the superpowers of our mind, right? You know, our talents, our unique abilities, our strengths, and so on. You you know, but I feel like they're super villains right now also. And like the four that we kind of touched on, we haven't put names to it, but the reason why the trainings I do in corporate America, you know, or people at leadership levels, is that the four things that are forces that are holding us back are really like previous generations didn't have these kind of challenges. Like they're all mm-hmm. driven by technology, digital. So digital right. overload, right? Too much information, too little time. The amount of information is doubling at dizzying speeds, but how we learn it, retain it, apply it, that growing gap creates something called anxiety. They call it information fatigue syndrome because everything's a syndrome nowadays. Higher blood pressure, compression of leisure time, more sleeplessness. Even if you have some free time, people can't enjoy it because of the second big challenge, because it's digital distraction. So you have digital overload. So that's why right. I dedicated my life to help people learn faster, read faster, and everything. Digital distraction, though, is this idea, like, how do you maintain your concentration in a world that's just vying for your focus, right? Media and marketing and everything with app notifications, social media alerts. And one of the biggest, like I have a video just came out like last month and has like 35 million views. It's insane. So I'm just talking about not touching your phone the first hour of the day. And you've heard this said before, but the reason why from a neurological standpoint is when you first wake up in the morning, you're in this alpha, theta, relaxed state of awareness, right? You're just coming out of delta, this brainwave state. Mm-hmm. You're incredibly impressionable. Right. And suggestible. Mm-hmm. And if the first thing you're doing is touching your phone, you're training your brain for two things. Number one, you're rewiring your brain to be distracted, right? Because every single like, share, comment, cat video, whatever it is, that dopamine flood along your learning, you know, motivation, centers is just, you know, like we did a podcast with, Dr. BJ Fogg, you know, at Stanford, you know, running the influence lab there. And I think one of his students co-founded Instagram. But it's just like think about like how much design is spent just to get people to do that. And so, and then you wonder why you can't focus on like the things that you need to when you get to work, because you're set your mind to be rewired to be able to focus on distractions. The other thing though, besides training your brain to be distracted, touching your phone first hour of the day, you're training your brain to be reactive, which is almost as dangerous, meaning that, you know, have you ever gotten like a bad voice message or text message, email, just like ruin your whole day? And, you know, my friend Brendan says an inbox is nothing but a convenient organizational system for other people's agenda for your life, right? And mm-hmm. the first thing you're doing is checking those messages and you're fighting fires and everything. Then you're a thermometer. Then you're just reacting.
Yeah. I mean, it throws you into like 0 to 100 in like 10 seconds,
exactly.
right? It's just like, there's no slow ramp. Like for me, I'm 100% with you. It's like, and don't get me wrong. Like I there's many times where I flip my phone over in the morning, I turn off my alarm, and then I see there's a few things on Instagram and I'm like, maybe I should go in there and check out what's going on, you know? So it does happen, but there's a big difference in terms of just like allowing myself to like slowly turn on the engine and kind of just like come up to speed. I just feel better and a little bit more going at the right pace throughout the day versus being like that double espresso. It's basically what it is. Little phone is a double espresso sitting there waiting for you. And it's like, are you going to hit it first thing? Or are you going to like, you know, slow go it? And it's tough. It's very difficult.
Yeah. And you don't want to be overflowing your, you know, that cognitive load. You know, a lot of people suffer from decision fatigue, you know, because we're just wasting all that energy towards, and we're using a lot of that vitality towards that. So I systemizing everything. But the main thing here, as I'm saying, is digital overload's an issue. That's just growing worse. Digital, that's distraction, you know, and so touching your phone, being reactive. Because, you know, for me, I have three things I need to do every day personally and three things I need to do professionally. And that I feel like that's within my chunks that I can handle. And I don't touch my phone until I get one of those things done. And that's it. At least, because at least I'd rather spend my time, you know, instead of reacting, being proactive, saying, okay, these are, you know, Tim talked about, these are my lead dominoes, right? You know, these are my focal points. You know, there's this, I just did this show. I was in Europe and we're in this shutdown power plant. And I did this episode on working smart versus working hard. And I opened the show like this because everyone wants to work. Everyone knows they should work smart, not work hard, but they don't know what that means, right? And so I tell this story about this power plant one day, you know, filled with people. One day it just stops. And they'll be dead silent. And the employees are freaking out. They don't know what to do. After hours and hours go by, the operations manager calls technician finds a local one in the area. Technician shows up. He says, you got to help me. This is so dangerous. We're losing all this money. Time's wasting. You're going to shut down a business. And the technician walks around the floor. And in, you know, in this, you have all these beams everywhere. And he goes to one specific beam. And on it, there are all these electrical boxes. He goes to one specific electrical box. He puts a big X with a marker on it. And he opens up the electrical box. And inside, you know, the bolts, you have the wires, you have the screws. He goes to one screw. He turns it maybe a quarter of an inch. And all of a sudden, bam, the entire power plant lights up. And the operations manager is like, thank you so much. You saved our business. You're incredible. How much do I owe you? The technician says, that'd be $10,000. And then the operations manager is like, just as equally as enthused, like, why are you kidding me? You were here for 5 minutes. All you did was turn that one screw. Any of us could turn that screw. He's like, give me an itemized bill. He takes out of his back pocket a notebook. He writes down the bill, hands it to him. He looks, the operations manager looks at it, says, I understand, takes out a checkbook, writes out a check for $10,000, hands it to the technician. You look at the bill and it says this, turning screw, $1. Knowing what screw to turn, $9,999. Yeah. But the idea here for people listening, the message is not that you have a screw loose, right? The message is maybe twofold, is that, you know, knowledge is not only power, it's profit, right? And having the right knowledge, we live in this knowledge economy, yeah, you could apply towards, you know, you being an expert in everything. But the other thing I'm thinking about is those screws, like that box, that's what, like a focal point. That's one thing you turn and all of a sudden it turns on a lot of other things. And I find that there are things in your relationship, there's things in your diet, there's things, you know, in your finances, there's certainly things when it comes to learning, that if you turn those screws, it gives you the biggest return. Like kind of like in military, they call them force multipliers, where you put the same amount of input, but you get multiple outputs and rewards that come from it. And so the multiple multipliers for me are motivation, understanding your motivation, because that leverage is why we act on things. So asking yourself, one of the tools is asking yourself questions and maybe in putting a number to your motivation and then playing this thought experiment where you amplify it going from a 4 to 6 and you play these mind games and really it tunes you into what gets you to do what you do. The O though in MOM stands for observation and just simple exercise, just listen. Like even if you take the word listen and you scramble it, it actually spells another word perfectly. It spells the word silent. And most people cannot just be silent with somebody and just be sincerely interested. And then the last M in MOM stands for the mechanics. And those are the things that we publish in our online programs and our podcasts, how to remember names, how to give speech without notes, how to learn another language, how to learn a musical instrument, how to change your habits, the top 10 favorite brain foods, all the things that are to-dos. But I just really feel like the deep learning, like the deep results we get are really 80% of them are the psychology. And that's what... But when I think about what keeps us from moving forward, I did an episode. I have a 10-foot Hulk, like an actual 10-foot Hulk in my backyard. And the reason why is because I didn't have much of a childhood, you know, because I was like, you know, I was broken and I didn't, you know, struggling through school and all that. So now I just, you know, I live this kind of super, I like superheroes and geeking out over that and going to Comic Cons and dressing up and stuff like that. But
I still have to do that. I haven't been to Comic Con yet. I need to make that happen.
Let me know when. I would love to show you around there. I did an episode with the Hulk in the background. I did 5 keys to smashing procrastination because I feel like if we need common sense, it's not common practice. Like there's a lot of things we should do that we just don't do. Right. But I'd love to give your listeners a framework for why they can't get themselves to do something. You know, like I feel like, you know, when you and I were talking before we started this conversation, it's just like we all know we should do like mindfulness stuff, you know what I mean? Or eat the right foods or move every single day or whatever it is, but why can't we do it? I think a lot of us are struggling because we're trying to use willpower to affect this level called behavior.
Right.
Right. And it's not very, doesn't really work because it dies down, right? And so whether it's remembering names or speed reading or anything, what I'd like to people to imagine this level of behavior, one level above it is this level of capability. This is the training you've had for that behavior. Because I find like, for example, if somebody wants to remember names, that's the behavior, but they don't have the capability, meaning they haven't been trained, then they're going to have a difficult time, right? But maybe they've had the training and they have the capability. Right above that level, it's kind of like this invisible level of beliefs and values. Because let's imagine behavior. The behavior is they want to remember names, right? Even they've gone through my podcast or online training and they know how to remember names, but they're still not doing it. They could have a belief issue, meaning they believe they don't have a good memory. And all behavior is belief driven. in order to create a new behavior, you need a empowering belief that allows that to happen, right? The success formula that I subscribe to is be, do, have, share. Be, so, but that syntax, that order is very important, because like a lot of, you've heard it because it's almost like comical. Like if somebody goes to have state automatically through an inheritance or like they win the lottery, right? And they have tens of millions of dollars and they went straight to the have, what happens over X amount of years?
Yeah, they lose it all
and then some. So they're actually worse off than they when they were started. And that's just like just the that's the fact. So be and I think the, one of the reasons why is they went straight to the have. They have millions of dollars, but they were never being a millionaire. You know what I mean? And so which means they weren't doing the practices of wealth and so on. So that syntax is really important. So going back to these like logical levels of learning, you have the behavior and then the capabilities and then the beliefs. Because if you have a disempowering belief saying I'm not smart enough or, my memory is poor, then it's going to show up in the behavior.
Yeah, that's really important actually, because that's been my issue. I've always avoided so many things just out of the belief that it wasn't possible.
Yeah.
You know, it's like if you walk into a conversation with people and you're like, here's five people, I'm never going to remember their names. Of course, exactly. You're never going to remember the names. You might remember one name. Mm-hmm. And I've told myself I can remember one person's name here out of these five.
Yeah.
And it magically that's what happens.
Dr. Wayne Dyer, has this quote saying, it's not that you're going to believe it when you see it. It's actually the opposite. You'll see it when you believe it, because all behavior is belief driven, right? Henry Ford said that. He said, if you believe you can or you believe you can't, either way, you're right. So it's a success inside out process. Like I remember I was preparing to run a marathon. Have you ever run these 5K, 10Ks?
I've done 10Ks.
Yeah, it's just grueling, right? And, but I grew up being a runner. My last name really is Quick. So first of all, there's a lot of, my destiny was pretty much planned
out.
You
changed it.
I did. No, my father's name is Quick. My grandfather's name is Quick. My life was pretty much planned out. I had to be a runner in school, which is a lot of pressure. I have to be very careful getting speeding tickets, because when you get pulled over for speeding, you hand the officer your license says Quick right on it. You're not talking your way to that ticket. And I get to do my mission, which is learn, teach people how to learn faster, think faster. And anyway, I was reading this book on it, and there's one chapter on the psychology of running a marathon. And it said this word for word, verbatim, because I'm a memory guy. It said, your brain is like a supercomputer and your self-talk is a program it will run. So if you tell yourself you're not good at remembering names, you will not remember the name of the next person you meet, because you program your supercomputer not to.
That's a good point.
That's what you're saying.
We're running software. Yeah,
exactly.
I agree.
And that's ultimately what I'm working on. I work on the hardware and the software. So there's things. So they say 1/3 of your memory is predetermined by genetics and biology. That's pretty much accepted. That means 2/3 is in your control. The 2/3, just optimizing your hardware, you're talking about a good brain diet. You're getting rid of those negative thoughts, because your mind is always eavesdropping on your self-talk, If people realize how powerful their minds are, like right now, as we're having this conversation, everybody has hundreds of millions of neurons firing off, right? Our brains will never be the same, because Oliver Wendell Holmes said, a person's mind, when stretched by a new idea, will never regain its original dimensions. I mean, it's changing constantly. If people realize how powerful their minds were, they wouldn't say anything that they didn't want to be true. And I'm not saying that one negative thought will ruin everything, because obviously that's not how it works like that. But one of the things you could do is just change the languaging a little bit. I'm not good with names, and add yet at the end, because that opens up that possibility, right?
I was just going to say, it's interesting that when, I first started off this conversation with you, and I'm sure it's tempting for a lot of people that you talk to. There's like, give me the tips.
Yeah.
Like, give me the 10 ways to do this. Give me the five. Cause like, those are hot little sound bites. They're really sexy. You want to get into the tactics. But what you're saying is we have to pause on that first, because there are a few other layers that need to be addressed before we get into the very specific tactics. Because if you don't have those other layers correct, none of it's going
to
work.
And I love that, Kevin, because you have to, I'm sure you've seen this also with things, is sometimes when we get, prescriptive with things, people want to know what to do, but so many of us know what to do already, but we're not doing it. And I think that's really the real conversation, is implementation. Like on social media, people, I would rather people not say it, but show it, and not promise it, but prove it. Because ultimately, knowledge is not power. It's potential power. It only becomes power, when we apply it. because all the the books on the shelf, they become shelf help and not like self help. You know, we don't mm-hmm. need any more ideas. The key is ideas alone, like information alone, is forgettable. So that's why you forget a name, because it's forgettable, right? Because like the periodic table is forgettable, like for most people, right? Information is forgettable, but information combined with emotion becomes a long-term memory. And you know this because, yeah. I mean, is there a song that could take you back to when you were a teenager?
Oh, yeah. For sure. I was just listening to some of them. I by the way, Spotify has a new playlist that you can search for that is like all of your like songs of your youth. It's insane. It's called Your Time Capsule.
Yeah.
I didn't even know this existed, but it pulled out like a ton of the songs that I love when I was younger. But yeah.
So it's the emotion that brings it there. Like a lot of people, you know, a lot of what we've learned is stuff that never happened in school. Like it's like how many lyrics, how many words to songs do you know? Like hundreds, right? But how many did you actually sit down and like study and make flashcards? And so we learn, we're naturally gifted, like we're organic learners. And so I would say that a lot of like, because everyone wants to know what that silver bullet is. What's the memory pill? What's the bottle of something that I could take? And I really feel like it's, you got to do everything. So it has everything from a good brain diet to getting rid of negative thoughts to movement. Because the brain, the primary reason we have a brain, just to be clear, is to control our movement. And there's a brain-body connection, but there's also a body-brain connection. Now, the brain is obviously part of the body, but as the body moves, your brain grooves. So it's important to be able to move, you know. And so a lot of people, they say, what, sitting is the new smoking, and, you know, we're so sedentary. Right. But you have to move, you know, every X amount, like, you know, I use the Pomodoro techniques every 25, 30 minutes, you know, get up and I do my breathing, my deep breathing, my hydration, and then my movement and certain physical movements that I do to kind of jumpstart my brain. But we have to move because that's the reason why we have a brain, right? And then when you move, mm-hmm. you create, you know, brain derived nootropic factors, you know, that helps like fertilize it for neurogenesis and neuroplasticity. Sure.
It's part of the reason why I do high intensity interval sprints.
Exactly.
Although I do them several times a week, and it's just like, it's straight creating new neurons in my brain. It's amazing.
They've been shown when people listen to our shows, like our podcasts, and they're like working out, they'll have better retention, especially if it's rhythmic working, like on elliptical mm-hmm. or something. They'll have greater levels of focus and retention of it. And then it's brain nutrients, right? I recommend mm-hmm. people get, you know, full spectrum tests, you know, nutrient profiles to see what you're lacking. But you know, omega-3s, DHA has to be top of that list. Mm-hmm. Number.
What do you do about like a gram of DHA a day?
About, yeah. And you know, so I think it's very important. I like to get most of my stuff through foods, you know, myself, but certainly, you could teach someone the best, you know, speed reading hack and everything. But if they're eating a crummy diet, processed foods, right. and they're around, like they have all these negative thoughts, like, oh, I can't read faster. So the 10 things that I just taught this at the Cleveland Clinic for Brain Health to their doctors and caregivers. Number one is a good brain diet. So I did a whole episode of my top 10 favorite brain foods and how to memorize them. You know,
I'm taking it. I haven't listened to that episode, but I'm taking it. You recommend a pretty anti-inflammatory diet, low processed foods, things of that nature.
Yeah. I mean, the first thing is, I mean, I can show people right now really, really quick. I'll show how to memorize it. Right. So this will be literally minutes. So there are 10 foods that I feel like are really amazing, like genius foods, if you will. And what I'm going to do is teach you a 2,500 year old memory technique to be able to memorize these 10 forwards and backwards. Now I use the same technique, to teach TED speakers and actors how to memorize points to a speech. And so the key is, this is it's dated, and some people might have heard about this. This is it's attributed to Simonides, who is a Greek poet 2,500 years ago. He's giving a poetry reading, and then when he leaves, something really tragic happens. The building collapses and kills everyone there.
Memory palace.
Exactly. So he was able to help family members identify their loved ones because he remembered where they were sitting. Because we store information in space, right? And because as hunter gatherers, you didn't need to memorize numbers and stuff like that. You need to remember where things were, right? Where's the clean soil? Where's the clean water? Where's the enemy tribe? Where's the food? So we store information in space. In fact, when you forget someone's name, Kevin, I bet you one of the first questions you ask yourself is, where do I know this person from? Because the context gives you the content, right? And so if content is king, I think context is like the whole kingdom, and it creates like, the meaning there. And so, So how orders would do it is they would take places they're familiar with and store the first idea in the first place of their home, the second idea in the second place, the third idea in the third place. That's actually where that languaging came from. If you've ever said to yourself in the first place this, in the second place that, and the third place that, it came from that 2,500-year-old memory technique. Now, the languaging is still there, but the technique, you know, is never bringing it back, if you will. So let's take 10 places on our body to make it simple, because we all have it with us. 10 places on our body, you could do this with me really fast, is number one is the top of your head. So just touch the top of your head. Number one is top. Mm-hmm. And everyone could just, as you're listening to this, just say it out loud, because that's your auditory memory. So number one is what? Top. Number two is your point to it in your nose. So nose. It says nose. Number three is your mouth. Three mm-hmm. is mouth. Four are mouth. Your ears. Mm-hmm. Five is your larynx, your throat. Mm-hmm. And so everyone goes to five and says it out loud. And six are your shoulders. Seven mm-hmm. is your collar. Mm-hmm. Eight are your fingers. So everyone says fingers. Nine is belly. And 10 is your seat, your rear end. Okay. So do it one more time. One is top. Two top. Is
nose.
Three is
mouth.
Four are
ears.
Five is
larynx. Yeah,
six.
Shoulders.
Seven. Is your collar.
Collar.
Eight are your
our fingers and then belly.
And then your seat. Then perfect. Seat. So now we have 10 places on our body going from top to bottom. Now here's the technique. Let's say you need to memorize a speech. You need to memorize a sales presentation. You need to remember client information, whatever. All you're doing is taking what you want to remember, turn into a picture, because that's the ultimate tip. TIP, turn into picture. That's what it stands for, because we tend to remember what we see and we tend to forget what we hear. Yeah, actually. So you go to somebody and say, you know, I remember your face, but I forgot your name. You never go right. to someone and say, hey, I remember your name, but I forgot your face. That wouldn't right. make any sense. Right. There's a Chinese proverb actually that goes, what I hear, I forget. What I see, I remember. What I do, I understand. What I hear, I forget. I heard the name, I forgot the name. What I see, I remember. I saw the face, I remember the face. And going back to practice, what I do, I understand, right? Putting everything to understanding through physical exercise. So knowing this, we're taking everything, turning into a picture, and we're putting it into place. So I call this the PIE method, P-I-E. So P is the place, the I is the imagination, and the E is you're entwining those two things together, right? So mm-hmm. we have the 10 places on your body. I'm going to go through the 10 brain foods. Now, I could go through the 10 keys that I just also taught to, you know, the Cleveland Clinic to unlock your brain health, but I'll go through that afterwards. So really fast. Number one, brain food, not in any particular order, but the first one I'll give you. Let's say, okay, so I want everyone to imagine this. We're going to have like a super brain barbecue party tonight at Kevin's place. He calls you up and you can't write any of it down, right? Because you're like driving or you're in the shower. I don't know why you'd be answering the phone in the shower, but it's always you come up with these ideas and you can't write them down, right? So he says, hey, can you stop by the grocery store, pick up these 10 things? And I want everyone just to memorize them, by putting them on your body. And the key is, who are the fastest learners? Like, children pick up things pretty fast, right? And part of it is their, you know, the gelling of their neuroplasticity and such. But part of it is they have wonder. Part of it is they play. I really feel like play is so critical to learning that we, you know, it's not like we stop playing because we grow older. It's the opposite. We grow older because we stop playing, right?
Yeah.
And so I encourage everyone to play more. But be childish with this. So the first thing is avocados. So we have need avocados for the party. So put avocados all over your what? The top of your head. So just, and now if you can't imagine, because some people have negative self-talk, it's like, oh, I can't imagine it. Then imagine you can imagine doing that. All right. So making guacamole on the top of your head, right?
Yeah. Now it's a very visual thing. That's easy like, you're not going to forget that for the next.
If somebody, if somebody like you're just walking down the street and somebody like put guacamole on your head, you would never forget that. Because here's the key. I never talk about this, but in physics, you have these variables, right? You have frequency, duration, intensity, right? And so apply that toward building a muscle. So you could build a muscle by doing frequency, right? Lots of reps. Mm-hmm. You could also do lots of duration. You could spend more time on that treadmill, right? Or you can have a longer workout duration, but, you know, but also, and I'm sure you've seen a lot of research on this, you know, like some people don't have, so the problem with frequency and duration is it takes what? It takes time, right? Mm-hmm. But there's some workouts that exist out there that are so intense, right? That you sure. could mimic or even surpass some of those kind of results, but with through intensity. And so
right.
same thing with marketing, right? Frequency is like somebody could see lots of ads, right? Or let's on the podcast or on the show or Facebook ads, whatever. Duration is somebody could see a longer ad, you know, a longer sales video, a longer webinar, a long infomercial, a longer sales physical presentation with somebody. Duration, that could get a result, but both of those take time. But you could also have an experience, you know, with a brand that's so intense, does take days or weeks or whatever. It's so intense. You're like, I got to have it, because people don't buy logically. They buy emotionally, right? And so same thing with your memory. Like traditional education, you know, 20th century education, if you're stressed right now, if anyone feels like overloaded or like distracted, everything's not your fault. It's just, we all grew up with the 20th century education, which prepared us for a 20th century world, which at the turn of this 20th century was like working in factories and assembly lines, right? So we just had to follow mm-hmm. orders, right? And so the challenges and how they would teach, like when churches would start universities and schools, they would do something called rote learning, which is all repetition. Teach and rote is like rotary. Like the Rotary Club is a wheel. And the first mm-hmm. half of the wheel is the teacher saying the fact, you know, some kind of like whatever, 1492, C6H1206, whatever. And then the students repeat the fact, and that's the first loop of the wheel. Then the teacher repeats it again, then the students repeat again. And then you do it 50 times, and then the brain gets out of fatigue, like, okay, this must be important. I'll code this now, right? But you can learn something like put guacamole in your head. You would never forget that. Because if you were walking down the street and it rained like X amount of weeks ago, you wouldn't remember that, right? But if somebody like poured, you know, coffee, you know, on your head from some building like 10 years ago, you would never forget that, right? Because they're right. based on memory principles, in terms mm-hmm. of what stands out. So going back to this focus on intensity, just make it intense. And how I like to make it intense are the vowels. A, E, I, O, U. A is action. You add action to it because we don't remember things that are just passive. You know, E is you make it emotional, because you have to feel it. If you can't feel it, you won't remember it, because we said the key to long-term memory, information combined with emotion becomes long-term memory. E could also stands for exaggerated. If you make it exaggerated, mm-hmm. you're more likely to remember it. The I is illogical. You want to make it illogical, because if it's too logical, no one remembers things that are illogical. We all remember things that stand out and are different. And from there, the O is outstanding. The U is make it a little bit unusual, right? So the idea mm-hmm. here is, how do you do that on your body? Guacamole on your head, avocados. You go to the second place on yeah. the bottom.
Well, I like one thing before we go to the second place. One thing that stood out there, and we say you make it kind of exaggerated and over the top, is that what you're saying is, you know, if it's just an avocado sitting on your head,
yeah.
5 weeks from now, 2 months yeah. from now, you might be like, oh, what was that? Was it an avocado? Was it a banana? Right. What was it? Right. So, but if you make it something like really like smeared and like in yeah. your hair, and you're like thinking about like this guacamole, right. that's a much more visual, exaggerated now that's more stickier yeah. in my brain than it would be just an avocado.
And that's a perfect word, stickiness. And that's what we're looking for in our marketing and our branding, even when people introduce themselves as other people. Even that's why, as the mechanics, when I talk about motivation, observation, and mechanics, that's why the technique of picturing someone's name is Mark, putting a little check mark on their forehead, is more memorable, because you'll remember that. Mm-hmm. Because when you're saying goodbye, it was like, oh, what was that person? What was I doing? Oh, I put a check on it, you know, for it. What's the name? You know, Mark. That's why when you meet yeah. someone named Mary and you imagine she's carrying two lambs underneath her arms, and you're like, you say goodbye to her, you know, 20 minutes later at the party, you're like, what was she doing? Oh, she was carrying two lambs. What's her name? Her name's Mary. Carol, Christmas caroling, right? Mike. Imagine meeting Mike, and all of a sudden he jumps on the desk and starts singing karaoke on a mic, you know, microphone. You know, you don't forget these things. Yeah. And you're like, Jim, that's so childish. No, you know what it does? It gets you to observe and focus, because it gets you to focus on Mike, and it gets you to focus on his name. And so even when it doesn't mm-hmm. work, it still works, because it puts your attention on it, where most people just don't have any kind of attention. And then once you know the person's name, then all of a sudden the picture disappears, because you coded it, right? There's three parts to your memory. You encode, you store, and then you retrieve. So the reason why people can't retrieve is they didn't encode in a way that makes it memorable, right? So even when we're doing this pie method, you know, like, you know, you're encoding the guacamole on your head, but you, and then the place, the storage is the head, right? So that's your filing system. Mm-hmm. So your body becomes like a filing cabinet for all these different things that you want to be able to remember. And so it becomes extremely, you know, practical. So the second place is on your body is what?
The nose.
knows. And so I would say this, another brain food are blueberries. They're very neuroprotective, antioxidants and so on, like free radicals. So I call them brain berries. But just imagine like blueberries, you're blowing your nose, out come all these blueberries. Kind of gross, nasty and stuff like that. But that's why it becomes memorable. Right.
Right. Or you can fit them up your nose if you wanted to. Like there's any number of ways you can think of blueberries in the nose.
And that's perfect. There's no right or wrong. It's whatever works for you. Right. And yeah. The other exercise in doing this, because some people who are so quote unquote left brain are very logical, like they don't want to, they resist it. But this is also a great exercise in creativity and imagination. The functions, remember we were saying like, you know, that we don't know where the economy and jobs and they're like are going because of technology and everything, you know, with AI and things being automated, things being outsourced, the things that I'm thinking, you know, that are going to be more human, like in terms of our mind, are superpowers like creativity, superpowers like imagination, superpowers like strategy, the things that we should be learning, right? Because ultimately those creative pursuits are going to be where, you know, you're not going to outsource that necessarily to a piece of software yet. And so,
right.
That's where our value is, you know, in today's economy. So this is great exercise in creativity, imagination, and strategy. So even if you don't have to remember this list, yes, you could write it down. But the third villain, I talk about digital overload, digital distraction, is digital dementia. That's the over-reliance on technology. This is a huge term right now in healthcare where we're so dependent on technology. We're outsourcing our brains. So it keeps our to-dos. It keeps our calendars. I went out to dinner, Kevin, with 10 people the other night. And when the bill came, I swear to you, 3 people took out their phones to divide by 10, you know, and you know, when they all just like,
like, this is pretty easy,
but we've gotten so lax in terms of our cognitive muscles. And now I'm the first to admit, like how many phone numbers did you know growing up?
Probably 4 or 5, something like that. They're important to me. My neighbors, my best friend, things like that.
Yeah, most people knew a lot of important phone numbers. But how many phone numbers do people know now, right? And here's the thing. Not that I
know like one,
right?
Maybe.
And you can be texting your family every single day, and you might not, if your phone is dead or you don't have it with you or whatever.
Yeah, you're lost.
But here's the thing. And I just did a program at Google last month about this, about digital dementia. Even if no one wants to memorize 500 phone numbers, I don't. Right. But we lost the ability to remember one. And that should be really concerning for people. And because and you're like, well, I can find everything online and search engine away from this. What I would say to that is why you have to improve your memory is because, well, look at the opposite. You know, it's from my thinking. I always just look at both extremes. If you lost half of your memories, half the people, you know, half the words that, you know, half of your expertise, like how functional would you be?
Yeah.
You wouldn't be able to perform well at all. So we know memory is key. The other reason why is because our life is a reflection of our decisions, right? Our literally everything that's come to our life has happened based on our decisions up to the sum total of here. We can only make good decisions based on the information we know, which means we remember that information. Otherwise we wouldn't know it, right? So that's why memory, I believe two of the most costly words in business or sometimes in life are I forgot to bring it. I forgot to do it. I forgot that conversation. I forgot that meeting. I forgot that name. I mean, it just goes on and on and on, right? So you can't be a high performer without having that ability. So number two, blueberries coming out of your nose. Third place is what?
Mm-hmm.
Your mouth. And then, so I want you to remember broccoli. So just instead of broccoli stuck in your teeth, big stalk of broccoli stuck in your teeth. I think everyone will remember that. Mm-hmm. Taste it. Number four are your ears, right? And I just want you to imagine olive oil. You're cleaning your ears with olive oil. Some people prefer coconut oil, saying it's good for your brain, like MCT. So imagine coconut earrings, right, in your ears. Number five is your larynx. And I want you to imagine eggs. Eggs, good for your brain. And so I would say, instead of an Adam's apple, imagine like a big Humpty Dumpty egg in your throat, right?
Yeah.
So we're halfway there. Great. And you remember avocados, blueberries, your mouth has what?
Broccoli.
Your ears have the oils.
Olive oil.
And then on your larynx, you have
egg.
Six, on your shoulders, green leafy vegetables. So look to your left and right. You're just balancing kale and spinach. Number seven, on your collar, I want you to imagine wild salmon. Really good for your brain, obviously. Sardines, if you eat them. But just imagine a necklace of wild salmon. And you smell it, see it. Imagine there. I'm going through these fast.
Yeah, and sardines are about the size of the little bones here. So you can like imagine a couple little sardines there.
Exactly. And this is, again, we're not doing lots of frequency. We're not spending a lot of time duration. But if you make it intense, that's how our memory works. It's a great exercise. Number eight are your fingers. And I like turmeric, very anti-inflammatory. I make like a golden, you know, milk, like a golden tea kind of thing with turmeric.
Yeah, I do turmeric all the time, and they look like fingers too. Like,
and if you did the turmeric, you can just imagine turmeric powder, which is like this gold orange powder all over your fingers because it gets everywhere, right? That spice. All right, great. Out of your belly button, which is the ninth place, I want you to imagine walnuts. Walnuts. You're eating walnuts right out of your belly button. And notice, just as a mnemonic, a walnut looks like the human brain, right? You know, it's like...
That's interesting. I would probably have swapped those. I would probably would have used walnuts for the brain and then avocado because it looks like a belly for the stomach area.
And that could work
area.
For you too. That's the best thing about it. Or for some people, it would be too logical and they might not remember it. But yeah, walnuts look like the brain. Certain foods, I don't think it's science, might be pseudoscience, but it's definitely a good mnemonic device. Certain foods look like the organ it supports. Like if you cut a carrot, it looks like the human eye. If you cut a tomato, it looks like the four chambers of the heart. So it's serving that organ more as a memory. And I'm not saying that there's a signature.
Lion's mane mushroom.
Right. Exactly.
Like, yeah.
I'm actually drinking lion's mane like tea right now. So nine, out of your belly button, you have the walnuts, right? Almonds are also very good. And then finally, the 10th superfood for your brain, I would say, is on your rear, is dark chocolate, which actually I don't even want to know, Kevin, what you're picturing for that. But dark chocolate on your rear. So now, as you listening to this, you're at the grocery store, you're at the health food store, you got to bring all, get these 10 foods for Kevin, our super brain party. What's the first thing on your body? You're walking down the aisles, but you already have your grocery list on you. You need to bring it. The first item on the top of your head is what?
Avocado.
Yeah. Out of our nose comes what?
Blueberries.
Out of our mouth, we have stuck.
Mouth is broccoli.
Out of our ears, we're cleaning olive oil. Number five on our throat, larynx.
Eggs.
Six, we're balancing. So
that choline.
Yeah.
The leafy greens on the shoulders.
And number seven, a collar.
Sardines and salmon.
On our fingers, we have all that turmeric. Out of our belly button, we popping out those nuts, which are the what? The walnuts. And then on our seat, our rear end,
dark chocolate. 85% or higher.
Anything that's good for your mood, it's good for your mind.
I got to tell you, I take 85% dark chocolate because it's, you know, obviously low in sugar. And I will get some almond butter and just 100% pure almonds, and you could just dip it right in there, and it's phenomenal. Yeah. It tastes so good, and you know, it's like so low in sugar. It's a great way to get both almonds and dark chocolate at the same time.
Yeah, I'm gonna do that right now because this is what people want to remember. What you eat matters, especially for your gray matter. So,
yeah, awesome. Well, I don't want to take up too much of your time, but let me ask you a question though. If people are new to like brain optimization, brain hacking, memory, all of this, you have a great podcast, but what are the ones that jump out to you and you're like, okay, this is my best work. If you want to get introduced to more of what I produce, what would you tell people to go and consume in terms of the content that you have out there available?
I appreciate that. The best, if people right now are struggling with overload, too much information, too little time, like you're feel like you're taking a sip of water out of a fire hose, really. Like there's just your focus and memory. The first episode, I designed this podcast to be an online academy for your brain. So I would do it in sequential order. So the first episode is learning how to learn. So it's learn how to learn the four ways to learn any subject or skill faster. Mandarin, martial arts, music, marketing. Start with number one and just go through the entire thing.
I didn't know that. So I've been listening to more of your recent ones, but I'm going to go back now and start at the beginning then.
Yeah, because it's really, and every single episode is only 10, 15 minutes long. So they're meant to be bite-sized brain hacks for busy people who want to learn faster and achieve more. And if you go to KWIK is my last name. Just to spell it right. Quick Brain, KWIKBrain.com. It has links to all of it, whether, you know, on all the different platforms, depending on your device. And when people join there, they also get three free brain training videos where you actually see me demonstrate in front of a group of people how to remember everyone's names using techniques and how to speed read and all that fun stuff. So it's kwikbrain.com. And then other than that,
awesome.
I know, you know, we connect on
your Instagram's awesome too.
Like, I do these. Gotta I do the lives there. on that. So Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, at Jim Quick, JIMKWIK. And I like doing lives and quick tips on just how to hack your brain and kind of live Q&As. But what I would ask everyone to do, because I like to challenge people, is to take a screenshot of this episode And I think one of the greatest brain hacks there is to learn something faster is to teach it to somebody else. Like if you re-listen to this episode and just, or go through your notes and just, and then think about somebody you care about that you wish would have listened to it, screenshot it, tag Kevin, tag myself in it, and put your big teach your community and your friends, put your big aha, like the one thing you walked away with. Because remember, knowledge is not power. It's only potential power. And it gives power when we utilize it, when we teach it, when we apply it. And that's a question I ask all the time. How can I, to avoid just making a theoretical ivory tower, how can I use this and how can I teach it to somebody else? And I would leave everybody, you know, with this idea that we've been talking about, like all this, we talk about some mechanics, but really this mindset, a lot of this success is an attitude. And I would say that your life is like an egg, that if an egg is broken by an outside force, life ends. But if it's broken by an inside force, life begins. And all great things begin on the inside. And so I would use this day as the day that you let out that greatness, you let out that genius, the next level that you know you're capable of.
Yeah, I love it. There's no doubt in my mind that having worked with so many entrepreneurs and would-be entrepreneurs over the years, the number one thing that prevents people from achieving greatness is just their own internal struggles, their own internal chatter.
Yeah.
The number of times people, entrepreneurs, have asked me like permission to go build something, like, hey, what do you think of this? I'm not going to do it. They're looking for someone else's, like, you know, to like put the sword on each shoulder and say, go forth, you know, but really it's people that need to break down those barriers. So I think that's a great message.
Yeah. You open this conversation with this box. I like people like to put people in boxes, and ultimately at the end of our life, we're going to be in a box. Right. And in that box, for me, there's no room for possessions to, you know, take with me. So that's why I like to invest in experiences. But also there's no room for regrets in that box. So I would say that, you know, to the degree we could live our life the way, you know, we're meant to be and not make excuses for it and own it, like have extreme ownership for that responsibility we talked about, you know, earlier today. And we make mistakes, but we learn from the mistakes and make those mistakes old and keep them in the past. Literally old mistakes. O is you own it. L is you learn from it. And the D in old stands for don't repeat it. Because I think that everyone always talks about insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. That's not insanity. That's just the result of a poor memory. You're not remembering those lessons. So
love it. Well, Jim, thank you so much for being on the show.
Appreciate you. Everyone have an amazing day. Wish your days be full. Lots of life, lots of love, lots of laughter, lots of learning.
All right, that is it for this episode. If you enjoyed it, head on over to iTunes, search for The Kevin Rose Show, and if you would leave me a 5-star review, that would be awesome. That gets this content recommended to more people, and in turn, we get better guests on the show. Also, just a quick reminder, follow me up at instagram.com/KevinRose. See you soon.